Support for Health Matters on MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Moorhead. Additional information on the Northeast AHEC is available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome to Health Matters. I am your host and radio health evangelist, Dr. Tony Weaver. This is the Jettison Medicine Show. It is our radio answer to the Dump Trump, Ditch Mitch, and we'll add it, the Chuck Mraz movement.
Is he still around?
That's right. That's why.
One of the three that was successful.
And here's the big thing. You get a chance to understand, to see in its early stages why Health Matters went off the air. You were here.
Have you ever heard of the beginning of the end?
Yeah.
Well, there it was.
Thanks to our listeners at True Talk Internet Radio with us to talk about the...
Pontificate.
Whoa.
It's going to be one of those shows, Tony.
Yeah, I thought you would pontoonificate, but you can pontificate on the web presence of Health Matters from the University of Kentucky, Manager of Communications Infrastructure, Rick Phillips. Hey, Rick.
Hey, Tony. You know you can get the audio of the shows at WMKY.org. That is Moorhead State Public Radio's website. No, that doesn't get you straight to Health Matters. You're going to have to find it in the menus. Believe me, we're getting pretty good at web pages now. You should be able to find the Health Matters page. And once you do, you will unlock the treasure of the most recent shows listed out for you. All you have to do is just click on the little link and you will hear us in our splendor. Is that enough big words for you?
I'm impressed. You have gone to vocabulary school.
Okay, enough of that. After you're done listening to the show, jump over to Facebook, facebook.com/HM Radio Show. You can do a search for Health Matters Radio Show, but be warned, there's a lot of Health Matters Radio Shows. We're the one that's 60 minutes. We're the ones that you can take so much of that you can listen to it for a whole hour, not just 30 seconds. Find the Health Matters link. You will find the fan page. Like us. Listen to us, interact with us, send us some comments, send us your feedback. We've got some dialogue going on there right now. We've got a couple of new energetic. Are they listeners?
Yeah, well, we're fans. I gotta say, Bruce is lighting up the page.
They like us.
Yeah.
They really like us, or at least one guy does.
In a Sally Field sense.
Facebook.com is your chance to be part of Health Matters. Interact with us. Again, find it at facebook.com/HM Radio Show.
Our sponsor for today's show, Sinus Pain Awareness League. Did you know, Rick, that March, in fact, is Sinus Pain Awareness Month?
Well, it's when everything starts growing.
Yeah. Including your nasal passageways.
Well, I mean, didn't all the allergy stuff start heating up? And that's
yep.
Isn't that what we're talking about here?
Yeah, and interestingly
Come on,
enough,
don't dung me down.
No, there are over a dozen things, awareness things in March.
You know what I hate about March?
And there's only about five or six.
The snakes are thawing out.
This is Snake Awareness Month. But back to Sinus Pain Awareness Month, the Sinus Pain Awareness League and their motto, don't just sit around in your unaware state. Find out about sinus pain. March Sinus Pain Awareness Month, sinusitis, the inflammation of the nasal cavities, affects 37 million people every year. According to the National Institute of Health, sinus problems are among the leading causes for children and adults to stay home from school or work, and there can be difficulty breathing, headache, sore throat, teeth pain, and fatigue. There isn't a way to completely prevent the onset of congestion and sinus pain, but there are some things you can do to help. First of all, we'll go back to the adult sinusitis guidelines, which were updated last April, back in 2015. And this is an important thing for our radio fans to know. I'm reading this word for word from Medscape, and they were quoting the Otolaryngology Head and Neck Surgery Journal for these guidelines. The update recommends watchful waiting for initial management of all patients with uncomplicated bacterial sinusitis, regardless of severity, watchful waiting, not just for those with mild illness. Clinicians often feel that sicker patients benefit more from antibiotics, but in fact, they don't. The antibiotics are fairly simple, a form of penicillin called amoxicillin. There is an additive they use to combat resistance, but here are the guidelines. When you're thinking about whether or not you need an antibiotic, that is for bacterial infections. A clinician should diagnose a bacterial infection when the signs or symptoms fail to improve within 10 days or more beyond onset, or if they are worsening within within 10 days. So if you think about that, Rick, it is not about, is there blood in the mucus or is the mucus a dark green? Is it thick? Do you feel extra bad today? It is 10 days watchful waiting unless you are getting very ill. And so that means that you're going to have to deal with this sinusitis for a while. The antibiotics are not going to be, we shouldn't be, if we're following guidelines, prescribing antibiotics on day two or day three unless you are extremely ill. Interesting change from what we've done before, where we watched the mild ones, and if the symptoms were bad, we would start antibiotics earlier.
But I mean, isn't that what most middle-aged guys do anyway? Wait and see.
Wait and see.
I mean, we don't go to the doctor. We just wait and see, and, you know, probably nag our wife a lot.
Right. So this is a guy's guideline. Right?
Right.
It really is.
Exactly.
This is, look, don't get excited about your sinuses. Let it go for a little bit. Things are going kind of bad, but as long as you can breathe,
could we say take it like a man?
Yeah, yeah.
Is that a fair?
And you'll love this, Rick, because, in fact, it is exactly what you're supposed to do. And while we're doing it, let's do some manly things to our nose to try to help with the sinus pain. So here are the guideline recommendations for pain relief. Number one, over-the-counter analgesics, non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, Motrin and Aleve. Well, what guy wouldn't do that?
Well,
I would take Motrin or Aleve if my sinuses were hurting.
Would you?
Yeah, I probably would.
I'd just let my sinuses hurt.
Now, here's a non-guy thing. You can use nose sprays, the topical steroid nasal sprays. This is things like Flonase and Rhinocort. These are available over-the-counter now, so you can go pick them up if you want. They increase the rate of symptom improvement from 66% to 73%. That is a 7% increase after 2 weeks.
Ugh.
Yeah, so you could get these.
So you're just wet-nosed is what you are.
Yeah, so you can get those sprays. Now, they will help clear your sinuses, but as far as pain relief, if you got a sinus infection, not much help. What about your favorite medicine, my favorite medicine, guaifenesin? That's the stuff that's in Robitussin. We have said before, we have no idea how it could possibly do any good. There is no evidence regarding any effect of guaifenesin on sinus pain. Antihistamines, no role. They dry up the nose when it's running, an excellent thing to do for allergies, but if your sinuses are congested with an infection and you dry them up, then they can't drain. Bad idea. The one that they recommend that might surprise you, and isn't this a guy thing, saline irrigation, saltwater irrigation, modest benefit. This is the neti pots, not a manly name, but basically you hook yourself up to some water source. I had a patient that liked to use a water pick in his sinuses.
Wouldn't it be better just to go to the Caribbean and enjoy the salt water in person?
Just and periodically get in the surf and,
absolutely,
and almost drown, get
absolutely
water in your nose.
Absolutely. Doesn't that sound more manly and better?
they did not recommend that. But
I mean, can you imagine your doctor recommends you go to the Caribbean for a week? How many people would go to the doctor more?
Yeah. You got me.
I'm sorry, boss. So, I have a doctor's note.
So, summarizing pain relief, sinus pain relief, use an over-the-counter non-steroidal like ibuprofen or Aleve. Use nasal irrigation, and you can get a saline spray, or you can get the neti pots and do it that way. Using antihistamines, not much help. Guaifenesin doesn't do much of anything for anything. The nasal steroids are great for allergies, not so good for sinus pain. That is our sponsor. Sinus Pain Awareness Month, the Sinus Pain Awareness League says don't just sit around in your unaware state. Find out about sinus pain. Start the show, Rick. This is also, I mentioned March is a crowded month. This is the National Poison Prevention Week.
That's because all the spiders come back out.
It's the American Association of Poison Control Centers.
And
this
snakes.
This is the 54th National Poison Prevention Week. The nation's 55 poison control centers remind you that while poisoning is the leading cause of injury death in the U.S., many poisonings are preventable, and expert help is just a phone call away. And I thought Jettison Medicine Show, that is a great time to talk about poisoning, because prescription medicines, it turns out, are a serious poisoning problem. First of all, they recommend, and this is something you got to think about, especially if you are the parent of small children, put the poison control phone number in your phone. 1-800-222-1222. 222-1222. Sounds like a Latin.
I'm going to have trouble. You know why?
No.
You know what the Delta phone number is?
Delta Airlines?
Yeah. Do I know it? Yes, I know the Delta
you know
Airlines.
It. Is it all twos?
221-1212.
How do you remember? Why would you remember that? That's just,
That's ridiculous.
It's not even a necessary
phone
number.
My head, as my wife would confirm, is full of useless numbers.
So now Rick has given you an alternative so that when your kids are poisoned, you can call Delta Airlines and get out of there quickly.
It's about going to the Caribbean,
but let's remind you, 1-800-222-1222. But you can look this up. The point is you get to have that poison control number on speed dial.
You just never know which direction we're going.
Because you really don't want to be at the last minute trying to figure out how to call the poison control center. And poison control centers, it's pretty darn neat. Most poisonings do happen in the home. 93% occurred at a residence. I, as a parent, my wife and I both at different times called the poison control center because we weren't sure what our kids had taken in their mouth, and we were anxious to try to get some information. And they do a great job of walking you through what you need to do if it's a serious type of chemical that your children have been messing with, or if it's something that will be okay and what you do about it. They are absolutely wonderful. All human exposures. What do you think people do overdose on? Analgesics or pain medicines? All people, all ages, about 12% of the time. Cosmetics and personal care products, that's about 8%. Household cleaning substances, 7.5%. Sedatives, sleeping pills, and hypnotics, 5.7%. And antidepressants, 4.2%. Now, if you look at the young kids, less than age 6, cosmetics and personal care, number one at nearly 15%, followed by household cleaning substances at 10%. The kids 6 to 12, foreign bodies. I don't know if I'd call the poison control center or not. I guess if my child swallowed a battery, which is very serious, I would want to get some advice on that. And I guess that's the foreign bodies that they were concerned about. Cosmetics and personal care coming in second at 7%. Teenagers, analgesics, 18%. Antidepressants, 7%. They are into the medicine cabinet in their teenage years. And then finally, adults over age 19, pain medicines, 10% of the time. Back to the household cleaning substances. Why? Why do we adults like the household cleaning substances?
Why do the males?
I guess what happens is you mistake your athlete's foot cream for toothpaste or something.
What?
Like that. I don't know, but why are adults, 8% of the time, adults are ingesting household cleaning substances? Now, Rick, right?
Proof more that men do not need to, you don't mean to mess with that stuff, right? You'll kill yourself. You'll literally kill
men
yourself.
Men, for your own safety, do not involve yourself in cleaning the house.
How many people?
This.
How many?
8% of the time, you're going to wind up calling poison control anyway, or that's not true. 8% of all ingestions are household cleaning products, and who wants that kind of headache?
Which means
you've got to clean up the living
room. Let's be honest. Split up the 8% between the men and the women.
Oh, it's
7.5%.
It's got to be the men. I just don't think the women are ingesting the household cleaning substances at the rate
that
men are.
I joke and jest, but my guess is the majority of that's probably children.
These are adults. That's
really
what I'm saying. These are adults. It is actually more adults call poison control for household cleaning substances than bites and envenomations. So you, Mr. Snake Awareness, need to start paying more attention to household cleaning products. That is where the true danger lies.
Hey, look, I don't mess with either.
Don't mess
I see with a can of cleaning solution, I go the other way.
Don't mess with that dial. Stay tuned. We're going to take a break and come back with our second fractional portion. You're listening to Health Matters on Morehead State Public Radio.
Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Morehead. The Northeast AHEC connects students to careers, professionals to communities, and communities to better health. The Northeast AHEC strives to improve the supply and distribution of healthcare professionals through the community and academic educational partnerships. More information is available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome back. This is the second fractional portion of Health Matters. I'm Rick Phillips.
I'm Dr. Tony Weaver. This is the Gettison Medicine Show. Our salute to the Dump Trump Ditch Mitch and Chuck Mraz movement, wherein we...
Which, let's be honest, the only one that's ever worked is Chuck Mraz.
That's right. And we'll keep
now, whether
around.
You think, however you want to take that, whether good.
Charles Mraz, we'll just go that way. And that way it sounds like we want to keep him around, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, we'll think about it. We got the second fractional portion. We'll come back after the break. Rick and I have some things to talk out, it sounds like. Our sponsor for the second time, the Sinus Pain Awareness League, reminding you, don't just sit around in your unaware state. Find out about sinus pain. The National Institute of Health indicates sinus problems are among the leading cause for children and adults to stay home from school or work. And we are trying to help you with your sinus pain. First of all, remember, antibiotics for sinus congestion. If you have a sudden worsening of your sinuses with thick green mucus and headache pains and so forth, the 2015 guidelines recommend recommend watchful waiting and antibiotics if your symptoms don't improve within 10 days or if they are worsening within the first 10 days. They call that double worsening. They come, they're bad, and then they actually get worse again. You probably need to get some antibiotics for that. But antibiotics are not the answer to sinus pain, certainly not in the day one or day two stage of a sinus infection. What they do recommend, analgesics medicines such as ibuprofen or Aleve, over-the-counter stuff. The nose sprays are excellent. They're absolutely excellent. They are the base, they are the first drug we use for allergies. For a sinus infection, not as good. Again, 2 to 3 weeks out, they'll give you about a 7% improvement in your pain symptoms according to clinical trials. Irrigation, using a saline spray, using a neti pot, modest benefit in two clinical trials and should be a part of your armamentarium. There's one that I use quite a bit, something called oxmetazoline nasal spray. This is Afrin and the generic brand right next to it. You spray that in, and for the next 12 hours, your sinus passageways will stay open. It will shrink the blood vessels down. In the ER now, we sometimes use it for nosebleeds. It's that good at shrinking blood vessels. The problem is, after 12 hours, it wears off, and that is very uncomfortable. They recommend you only use it for 3 days, and the reason is eventually you're just spraying your nose just to avoid the wearing off. And people have gotten stuck on Afrin or oxmetazoline before, and that's why we're not that fond of it. But it does work. Antihistamines, really no role. They're great. Claritin Clear is an excellent thing for allergies. Claritin Clear is not going to help you much if you have a sinus infection with thick green mucus. And guaifenesin, again, my favorite non-drug. We can't tell that it does anything at all. This is the stuff that is in Robitussin. Says that it thins mucus, says that it is good for cough, and yet really no scientific evidence it does anything at all. That's the Sinus Pain Awareness League. Don't just sit around in your unaware state. Find out about sinus pain.
A lot of room to make mistakes in that.
I don't see it, but I'm not sure what you're talking about.
In what you're talking about, the way you said that, well, there was a lot of room there for you to say the wrong thing.
Hmm. Okay. I'm not, anyway.
Go back and say it. When you're alone, just go back and recite it and go slow, and you'll figure it out.
I had an interesting experience this week. I've had several, but this one I'm going to talk about. If I have the opportunity.
It's your show.
Yeah, thank you. I went to the physical court and sat in with the magistrates and with our judge executive.
Sorry, I used to do that all the time.
For our international listeners, this is a local thing. And it turns out that there is a newly opened hookah lounge at the 801 interchange.
For now.
And this place sells an incredible amount of
hookah.
Paraphernalia, I guess you would call it. They have rolling papers in case you want to roll your tobacco. They have scales in case you want to measure your tobacco. They have hookah pipes in case you want to use the shisha, the honey tobacco that they put in those, and various other appliances. And there is concern that having that much paraphernalia may in fact lead to other drugs being used in that area. The surprising thing is people stopping by to smoke their tobacco at 1 o'clock and 3 o'clock in the morning, parking lot full, concerned about what's going on at that 801 truck stop. And if I were a concerned citizen, I would keep my magistrate, my fiscal court, to task on this because there are concerns about that hookah lounge.
Well, that hookah lounge actually applied for a permit in the city and was denied. And then they moved out into the county.
Yeah.
And now there's some, you know, you can see there's some question as to whether that's going to get a revisit.
$15 per hookah session, according to the advertisement placed on Morehead State campus next to the ATM. And Rick is right. We were able to use our all substances indoor smoking ban in the city, but the county does not have one. But there are concerns about that. As I said, I would recommend our citizens stay involved and keep an eye on developments with this particular establishment. Next up is a more international topic. This is the Swedish study on canine companions and heart health. This was presented at the American Heart Association poster session in 2016. A guy whose name I will absolutely butcher. His name is Mwinya Mumbanga from Uppsala University in Sweden. Now, Rick, in Sweden, since 2001, over the past 15 years, dog owners have been required by law to register their dog.
Okay.
So we know everywhere in Sweden where the dogs are.
Great.
They looked at the Swedish National Registry.
Do we know when they have babies?
To see how dog ownership. I suppose they have to register the babies. Okay. I mean, you register, if you have more than one dog, you have to register more than one dog, I would think. They looked at how dog ownership was related to new heart disease events or mortality. 3.3 and a third million adults who were 40 to 80 years old. They were not recent immigrants, so they were regular citizens of Sweden. No prior heart disease, and we could follow them for 10 years. Of those 3 and a third million, they had 162,000 dog owners. That's less than 5% of their population owns a dog. And I think that's one of the problems with this study, is there may be something really different about those 5% of people who could own a dog. Maybe they're better educated, maybe they're wealthier, maybe they're more rural. Well, don't know. But at any rate, only 5% of people in Sweden own a dog. Same number of male and female, same number completed college, same number were born in Sweden. They did live in a more rural area, and fewer dog owners were single. And we've talked a lot about the benefits of marriage in terms of your health. Dog owners who lived alone or with at least one child or adult were less likely to die of heart disease and less likely to die of all causes during the 10-year follow-up than people who didn't own a dog. And those relationships were strongest for people who lived alone. Here we go. The risk of having a heart attack or heart failure or a stroke dropped 39%. For dog owners who lived alone. If they didn't live alone, it dropped 15%. The all-cause mortality, taking cancer and everything else, dropped 35% for those who lived alone if you had a dog, and dropped 12% if you didn't live alone. So it looks like, one, if you are, if you know an adult who's living alone, they should get a dog.
Right.
Now, keep in mind, only 5% of the population had dogs, so things may be different in Sweden than the United States, but that's pretty darn impressive. Now, they thought, okay, maybe the dogs calm them down. Maybe the dogs make them stay. I think this is true. A dog will make you have a regular routine. You know, if you live alone,
right,
you can pretty much stay up and watch TV all night, except if the dog's got to go out in the morning, you're going to have to get up and do something. So I think dogs help keep you on regular schedule as well. Maybe the dog owners, because they own dogs, maybe they were healthier because they felt they could own dogs. There's a lot of possibilities there. But one possibility is actually owning a dog may make you healthier.
Well, and I think, it, you know, there's a lot of companionship there. I think, you know, coincidentally, you know, my wife is currently on a mission trip in Africa right now, and it's me and the dog. That's it. That's all it is. And, you know, granted, now he's only a 5-pound Yorkie, so it's not much of a dog either. But
right, and he's her dog.
Yeah, for the most part.
Okay, let me ask you something. Who feeds the dog every day?
Well, now I do. But she does, yes.
Yeah, she feeds the dog every day. Who takes the dog out?
We split those duties, not 50-50, but I do the late night, and she does the early morning.
So Rick is now has inherited his wife's dog. I think we've established
for
that fairly clearly.
15 days, that's correct.
15 days while she is gone. And that dog is probably making you a better man.
Yeah, probably right.
You had so many answers to that, and you just swallowed them all.
It forces responsibility, yes.
Yeah. And
it forces, you're right, structure. It forces you to be engaged, and you can't just, you know, at that point you can't just plop down on the couch and that's all you ever do.
Right. Now, my mother-in-law, when she lived to her mid-90s, and she had a dog that stayed with her in the bed. The thing is, those responsibilities got a little bit less. She was not less conscientious, obviously, as she got older. So I think a very old person with a dog, they just don't care anymore. The dog just does whatever the dog does.
True.
I don't know, again, within the Swedish study, they chopped it off at age 80. So we don't know in the 80s or early 90s if dogs help. But up until age 80, there seemed to be a benefit, and they did not separate it further by age. I don't know, say, a 75-year-old versus a 55-year-old, how much effect it would have. But Rick's right. I mean, there's a responsibility. There is maintaining the daily routine. There is the companionship. There is the exercise. There might be the fact that in order to buy a dog, you have to be in a little bit better health. But I don't know. A lot of my patients who are chronically ill will buy a dog for that companionship. So I can't say that that I see a selection of healthier people buying dogs. I see pretty much anybody that wants companionship gets a dog.
Right.
And if you have someone who has lost a loved one, a dog can make a big difference. They become a part of the family. Do not underestimate the impact of losing a dog On a senior citizen. It is like a family member has died. It is
not only senior citizens. I mean, you know, I'm attached to our little guy, and I was never much of a little dog guy. I like the big labs and the, you know, the German Shepherds and the Great Danes. I mean, big guy. I like big dog. But
you're changing. Well, I can see you're becoming more sensitive.
It's not that. You can try that all you want, but that's not the case. It's just that he is absolutely lower maintenance. He's easier to take care of. I mean, you know, if he sheds, there's, you know, six hairs, who knows where they are. I mean, he's 5 pounds. I mean, he eats a tablespoon worth of food twice a day.
Right, and this is not a dog who could knock anything over, no matter how excited.
We can't get high enough up to anything that's standing up.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I mean, granted, he can jump and climb and do, you know, but again.
He sits on the couch.
Absolutely. He gets on the bed. Yeah. I mean, if it's 3 foot high, he's stuck.
Do you build stairs for your dog?
I have, yes.
Yeah, I thought so.
I didn't build them. Actually, my dad had them for one of his dogs, and he passed it on to me, but only so to get up on the bed. Our bed is probably a little over three feet high, so it's hard for him.
Rick Phillips.
But he gets up on the couch.
Dog lover.
I tell you, it wasn't always that way, you know, but again, he's small enough to where he's manageable. And right. So I see him being a great older person dog.
Yeah, I think you have to, obviously, the as you mentioned, the larger, more energetic dogs are really a bad match.
Well, I mean, when I walk him,
it just doesn't work at all.
When I walk him and put him on a leash, I don't even have to, like, sturdy up my hand when he goes running to the end of the leash. I mean, he can't pull. I mean, he's just not strong enough. But you get a bigger dog, and if you don't do proper obedience training, then you're going to have a hard time managing that dog at an older age.
Right.
And so I think that plays a lot into it.
Absolutely. So dog ownership.
You want to switch owner. I know you want to, or you want to switch topics. You're dying to switch topic.
If you want to talk about your dog some more, that's fine.
No, I want to talk about your dog. You don't walk your dog. See, your dog stays outside for the most part.
No, what we do, I have three dogs. Two of them are basically, you would call them rescue. We didn't rescue them. They just walked up. I don't think that's really much of a rescue.
They chose you.
Well, somebody put them outside their car. We live in a pretty lonely area, and this is an area where people dump dogs, and they dump the dogs. And so we pick these two dogs up, and we've got one that we bought before we had those, and we have three dogs. They stay outside. I have provided housing for them. We bring them in when the weather's cold and so
forth. You've given them a pool.
Yeah. They have a place to swim. my golden retriever fishes. He has caught fish, we believe. There have been dead fish in the yard that with no explanation, so we think he probably pulled them up. He doesn't know what to do with them, but he just leaves them in the yard and watches them flop. Dogs can amuse that way.
You need a camera.
Yeah, probably do. But at any rate, we do that, and then my wife is involved with the local rescue group.
Look at all this.
Dogs.
Look what it's done. Look what the dogs do to your life.
They ruin it.
No, I wish they wouldn't take the fish out of the pond, because you got a nice pond.
Yeah, but that dog has done more fishing than anyone else in my pond over the last 5 years, I'll tell you.
That's because you don't invite me over anymore.
Low rate of actually success, but does do that. Next up, we are moving on. This is actually left over from the Healthcare Information and Management Systems Society 2016 conference attended by one Rick Phillips. And there was a point here that I thought we ought to look at. You know, I think we've all seen those commercials where the person wakes up in the middle of the night and they want to see a doctor, and so they just open up their tablet and they contact the doctor.
Great.
And you said, I believe, that was like $50 cash.
Right. It's a cash transaction.
Right.
There's no insurance involved.
Baby boomers hate that. Baby boomers are the most resistant to that type of medical care.
Well, sure. It's a millennial service.
Right. It is. Well, first of all, older people have no options. They love having a doctor in their house because they are not able to get out. So it actually, among people with chronic illnesses and shut-ins, they have a fairly high rate of acceptance. And as Rick said, the other end of the spectrum, young people are used to doing everything imaginable to mankind over their phone and their tablet, and so it seems perfectly normal for them to consult a doctor over their tablet. It is us middle-aged people that seem to struggle with this concept, and our adoption rate is lower than either end of the spectrum. I thought that was interesting.
Well, the problem is we understand both sides, but we're neither side.
Right. Yeah.
We're just trapped in the middle, and you know, the thing about me is I have been to the doctor. I have gotten valuable advice from my doctor. I have, you know, and so there are things that come up in the course of your examination that won't come up on one of these cookie cutter checklist. Have you done A, B, C, and D? And after that, okay, the call's over. Put in another 25 cents, please. Which, you know, if you're a boomer, you know what that reference to that joke is. If you're a millennial, you don't know what I'm saying.
25 cents, what?
Well, we don't exactly have a lot of millennial listeners, right?
We don't know. We don't have a lot of listeners, period. So, yeah, I would say we can definitely
Bruce hasn't
that.
Told us what yeah, is right. Is he a millennial? I don't
know. No, absolutely not.
You never know. I mean, you know, people surprise you, Tony. But nonetheless, my point is, I think we're just trapped in the middle. We've experienced both sets of experiences, and I think we always kind of gravitate back towards the human element of it. And the video can be very impersonal. If you haven't adopted that method or you're not comfortable with doing that, then, you know, it's very, it just feels cold and impersonal. As to where the millennials, you know, they just have adopted, embraced that, and they can literally be very excited about a video conference.
Well, it's not yet compensated by many insurances for routine visits or for middle-of-the-night visits, that type of care. But you pay your money, and you can get access to a physician very easily.
Sure. And just to deviate just a little bit from your topic, where you're going to see that kind of technology move in the future is you're going to see that not necessarily is a physician or a hospital system or some medical system getting reimbursed for that direct consult. What you're going to see is that overall consult both prevents admissions and reduces stays. And so those two things alone, you know, used to in the 70s, you know, the 80s, you kept some, the longer they stayed in the hospital, the more money the hospital made. Well, that's not really the case now. So you've got to keep them in the hospital less, and you got to get them out faster, or keep them from coming in altogether. That's how you make your money,
right? And with the advent of wearables and with the advent of these telecommunications systems, you can get a lot of medical care and a lot of monitoring in your home that were not even
absolutely.
Possible
10 and
years
what
ago.
And that just serves the mission of reducing costs.
Yep, I can hear you.
So I don't know. It's not going anywhere.
This message to both our millennial viewers. This is from the AMA Journal of Internal Medicine, and it was about 2 weeks ago. A smartphone app used to measure blood pressure yielded highly inaccurate results. Researchers had 85 adults had their blood pressures measured using the office cuff with a standard protocol, and then they used this thing called instant blood pressure. You put the top edge of the smartphone on the left side of your chest. You put your right index finger over the camera, and it gives you a fantastically wrong reading of your blood pressure. 12.5 millimeters off on the top number, 10 millimeters off on the bottom number. 80% of people who had high blood pressure would be falsely reassured that their blood pressure was in the normal range. It was pulled from the market in July 2015. However, this particular app had already sold over 148,000 copies, and it is in widespread use. I think the point is, if we're going to go that route, if we're going to be using these apps, if we're going to be using these products, we have to make sure we have accurate numbers coming from them. And we do not, at this present, have a way to certify apps. It is a buyer beware market. Meanwhile, beware of the fact that we're going to take a break. We're going to come back with our third and final fractional portion. You're listening to Health Matters on Morehead State Public Radio.
Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Morehead. The Northeast AHEC connects students to careers, professionals to communities, and communities to better health. The Northeast AHEC strives to improve the supply and distribution of healthcare professionals through the community and academic educational partnerships. More information is available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome back. This is the third and final fractional portion of Health Matters. I'm Rick Phillips.
I'm Dr. Tony Weaver. This is the Jettison Medicine Show. Again, our salute to the
Can it be the George Jettison? There's something the millennials don't know about.
Yeah. If I say Jettison and you think the word George, that puts you at a certain
age
period in life, didn't it? But this is actually, it was the closest we could come to the Dump Trump, I guess, the idea of an alliterative title to the show, and it didn't work. I know that. But what's the title for anyway? We just have fun with it.
Yeah, but you got to love the Chuck Mraz. I mean, Ditch Mitch, you know, okay, yeah. That one's getting old. It's been around too long, and apparently they don't know how to do it.
Yeah. Well, it's fun to make fun of him, but we haven't had a real Chuck roast around here in a long time. This is our sponsor, is Sinus Pain Awareness League, reminding you, don't just sit around in your unaware state. Find out about sinus pain. March is Sinus Pain Awareness Month. 37 million people each year have sinusitis, inflammation in the nasal cavities. This is different from allergies. Allergies, obviously, March is the time for allergies. A watery discharge from the noses from the nose with often with tearing, especially when you're exposed to pollen. We all know about that. The sinusitis is an actual infection. Now, a lot of these are viral, but they can also be bacterial. And this is among the leading calls for adults and children to remain home. Let's remind you of the April 2015, published April 1st in 2015 in the journal Otolaryngology Head and Neck Surgery. The new changes. First of all, we still treat with a type of penicillin. We can put an additive to that called clavulanate to try to extend the spectrum so that germs aren't resistant to it. But here are the guidelines. And when you're talking about a bacterial sinusitis, one that needs antibiotics, you diagnose this when your symptoms or signs fail to improve within 10 days or more, or the symptoms or signs actually worsen within the first 10 days after an initial improvement. They call that double worsening. If it has not been 10 days, if you have just simply felt bad for 2 days, antibiotics, according to these guidelines, are not indicated. And again, you can have a viral infection. Antibiotics won't do a bit of good. We have a hard time differentiating bacterial and viral just based on the color of the mucus or how bad you feel. That doesn't seem to work. If you are having sinus pain, over-the-counter analgesics, non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, or acetaminophen, that is Tylenol, ibuprofen, Aleve, those type of medicines work pretty well. The steroid sprays are excellent for allergies. They are our first choice for allergies. They don't work as well for a sinus infection. Drop your pain symptoms by around 7% after a couple of weeks. We do use saline irrigation. This is in a nose spray bottle, a saline spray bottle, or as part of a neti pot, and that seems to help out with pain. Two small studies showed that Afrin nasal spray or a similar generic spray reduces congestion and reduces sinus pain, but you can only use it for 2 or 3 days before you start to get in trouble with that. Antihistamines, Claritin, Zyrtec, those drugs have no role in the relief of sinus infections. No role. And the same way, guaifenesin has no role in anything. It's the stuff that's in Robitussin. It is an interesting chemical that apparently does absolutely nothing at all. That's our sponsor, the Sinus Pain Awareness League. Don't just sit around in your unaware state. Find out about sinus pain. Rick, I ran across this. Actually, people were making fun of it, and I looked at it, and I decided we should make fun of it, too. This is a publication about a telepresence wheelchair for elderly people. Now, this is, say you've got your mother or your elderly relative is somewhere in a different city far away from you, but they have internet connections. What they have been able to do is to take a wheelchair, a motorized wheelchair, and put a screen in the front of it. That's you. You can talk to your mother or grandmother. Okay. They have been able to give you controls so that you with your fingers can guide this wheelchair, and they put a camera, a high camera, up behind the person so you can see where the wheelchair is going. So what happens then is you visit your mother electronically in the nursing home and drive the wheelchair down to the cafeteria or the lounge or the common seating area, and you can sit and talk with your mother while she goes somewhere. Or you could, I guess you suppose you could do it. You could take her to the art museum or somewhere like that if you're adventurous. And I just thought, you know, there are so many ways that could go wrong. They had them drive it around a simulated room and did fairly well with it. That is, it moves slowly and you just take your fingers and on the screen and you can make it do turns. But obviously, if you miss the fact that there's a drop-off there with your camera, then mom goes out in the street or out in the floor, out of the wheelchair.
She becomes a Wile E. Coyote commercial or a cartoon.
Now, you know, you could, obviously, you could Skype with her. You could give her a laptop or him. You know, it could be male or female. But you could give your elderly relative a laptop and you could just go in and talk to them without having to drive the wheelchair. The other thing that people talked about, the ones who were making fun of it, is what if this thing gets hacked? What if I get control of your grandmother's wheelchair? This is not a good situation. I have no morals. I don't even know this woman. I just want to drive her around and annoy her.
Gives a whole new meaning to driving Miss Daisy.
You just see her doing laps around the nursing home till her battery runs out because I've got control of the wheelchair. Could she stop me or he? I don't know. You know, I think probably once I got control of it, I could pretty much drive all the wheelchairs. We could have wheelchair bumper
races.
Yeah. This would get awful.
Yeah. Well,
it could. You know,
I mean, getting her to, you know.
We've talked about this before. Hooking things up to the internet is really a mixed bag.
It is, but at some point, Tony, there are only so many people with the intelligence, and I'm, I'm, you know, I hate to give respect to the hackers because some of them are extremely brilliant. I mean, they're brilliant. Their mind is gone for the wrong reason, right? It's not serving society anymore. But it takes a certain level of person to hack the fairly well designed application or technology, right? We can keep most people out. The Internet of Things, right? It's a term you hear all the time. Do you know what even think about what that means? It basically means everything's going to be hooked to the internet. You know, when there's a, you know, trillion things hooked to the internet and only 80,000 people who know how to deal, you know, to do any kind of damage, at some point the odds are going to prevent stuff like this from happening. There'll be too many more important things to do, like rob banks and that sort of thing.
Yeah. You know, to me, there is a show on TV called CSI Cyber. I actually have watched it once.
I watched it twice and gave up. It's wrong.
It's awful. It's absolutely awful. When you think about the possibility of locking down a hospital or locking down, about the time the enemy attacks, we got one of these things that goes in and locks down all of our missile commands or whatever.
Right.
You think about the idea of being able to send hundreds of Google cars basically barreling into something by controlling them, controlling pacemakers, insulin pumps, and so forth. There are so many fascinating facets to illegally hacking systems that are much more interesting than what they're doing on that show.
Right. No, I get it. Plus, half the time, you know, I've watched, what's another one? There's Law and Order. But the big one is Criminal Minds. That's a big one with my family. They, you know, it's like, but they'll say there's a computer person on there, and unfortunately they call her Baby Girl, right? That's what they call her. And so she'll literally say, oh, I'm finding everybody that's in this neighborhood that has this criminal, and she gets that data in like seconds. It would take a really good database programmer probably an hour to create the things it needs to find that, and then get connectivity to those particular databases is a whole different story. So, I mean, the way they exaggerate these, I can't watch it anymore.
Yep. Agreed. I think they miss the exciting aspects of the criminal part, and they overstress the...
Exactly. It's the same thing for a lot of medical people. They get tired of watching a patient go from normal sinus rhythm to zero.
Flatline.
If you've ever been in a hospital, and if you've ever had the unfortunate encounter with death or somebody dying on a monitor, which, you know, I think both of us have had to experience that, it is nothing like that.
All right. Let me give you my pet peeve, is sex in the call room. I took call with people of the opposite gender.
Well, but Tony, it's you.
Basis.
It's not. I mean, what if it was? What if it was? You know.
Well, let me just say,
Dempsey.
I know, but there was one call room for a number of residents for a different. And the thing was, either we were busy beyond belief, or we were absolutely exhausted. There was no time, and there was no energy for this sort of thing.
And well, see, now me right, and my, I asked my wife about this, and she gave me the same answer. So
yeah, we were absolutely. I mean, if you actually had time to get in bed, the last thing you wanted to do was more physical activity of any sort. You basically, as soon as your eyes were closed. I mean, a lot of surgery residents would sleep standing up. They could sleep
standing up. My wife has learned to sleep standing up. She can do that.
Yeah, and I saw that as well. I couldn't do it personally, but I saw a lot of people that did. And that kind of person is not going to get real amorous in between calls. It's
so
just
needless to say, we've watched Grey's Anatomy once or twice in our house, and all it took was the closet scene, and then that was it. We were done.
No, we don't have time for this sort of stuff. Next up, I'm getting serious. This was back to January, but I've been waiting to get it on the air. Diabetes. 400 and change million adults in the U.S. have diabetes, and by 2040, they estimate there'll be 650 million or so have diabetes. The interesting thing, this is absolutely fascinating, there has been a decline in new cases of diabetes in U.S. adults. New cases fell from 1.7 million in the year 2008 to 1.4 million in the year 2014. That is the first consistent drop in new diabetes cases since 1990. And anywhere in the world, Cuba in 1991, during their economic crisis, saw fewer cases of diabetes, but they were starving. I mean, they had food rationing, and so they weren't able to get diabetes. So they asked, what's going on in the U.S.? Why is it that our diabetic rates are dropping? One, possibly changes in diagnosis, but they really don't think so because even though we've have new criteria for diagnosis, we've never really been very good at diagnosing it and consistent. Secondly, and this is a little scary, they said, well, maybe we have saturated ourselves with type 2 diabetes. Everyone who's going to get it has got it because there's so much food in the U.S. Maybe, probably not. Screening has not been that effective so that there aren't any new cases. They said the most hopeful explanation, obviously, is that maybe we're starting to learn how to eat a little better. You wonder if maybe we are starting to back off that low fat, high carbohydrate diet, and perhaps now we're actually seeing a reduction in our diabetes from that. This is all speculative. We don't know why, but the fascinating thing is we actually have now a sustained drop in our rate, annual rate of new diabetes cases, and this is the first time essentially in modern history it's happened. Fascinating. Another fascinating thing. I'm going to keep with the trends, Rick. Interrupt me with your important observation, certainly, should you have one, but I'm going to just keep going here.
But you go. I'll be back in a few minutes.
Epidemiology, Prevention, and Lifestyle Cardiometabolic Health. This was the American Heart Association 2016 poster sessions. Since the 1940s, we all know this, heart disease and cancer have been number one and number two causes of death. If you are an American and you survive to a certain period of time, heart disease and cancer are the way to go. As a matter of fact, you worry if you cure heart disease, then you wind up dying of cancer. That's not a necessarily an improvement in the method of exit, although you probably will live longer. They looked at this group, this Brigham University, looked at CDC data from 1999 to 2013. On a national level, heart disease has always been number one, cancer number two. Heart disease fell from 32% higher down to 4% higher. Back in 1999, 49 states had a higher rate of death from heart disease than cancer. Alaska, the only state, had a higher rate of death from cancer. I don't know why, but Alaska, people died of cancer quicker. By 2013, only 27 states had more heart disease death than cancer deaths. Kentucky, I will tell you, I've been watching these numbers. Kentucky flipped around 2011, 2012. We now, in the state of Kentucky, we lose more people to cancer than we do to heart disease. One, our population's getting older, and cancer occurs more frequently among older people. Two, both cancer and heart disease rates are dropping, but heart disease rates are dropping faster. We're not entirely sure why, but it's true. Heart disease is dropping faster, and so even though cancer rates are declining, they're not declining as fast. And one thing they mentioned, which I thought was interesting, Rick, is that when you stop smoking, your risk of heart disease drops fast. Your risk of cancer takes longer to get down to normal.
Hmm.
So what we may be seeing is, in fact, a massive change in our smoking habits outside the hookah lounge that's now at 801. Everybody else has stopped smoking, and we had a drop in our heart disease rates, and we have a slower drop in our cancer rates. But I anticipate for the foreseeable future, more Kentuckians will die of cancer. And it's about 10,000 each, 10,000 of heart disease, 10,000 of cancer. But more will die of cancer than heart disease as far as we can see going forward.
What other fascinating things do you have today?
I got one more, Rick, and you'll like this one. Oral-B has a new toothbrush.
Really?
The genius. And who would not want to have a genius toothbrush?
Well, I was going to say, would you want to brush your teeth with a genius?
Well, apparently you would. $250 you would pay for this thing.
Well, you're no genius if you bought it.
It has accelerometers, gyroscopes, Bluetooth, and a smartphone app and cloud storage. And what it does, it gives you instant feedback on whether you touched every zone. This is your worst nightmare, Rick Phillips. It gives you feedback on whether or not you actually brushed all of your teeth. How much pressure? It gives you help on how to change your brushing habits. It's expected to hit the market in July.
Well,
and
I
Rick
can tell
Phillips
you one thing.
Is going to finally have to communicate with his toothbrush and explain why he will not wait for the beeper to sound before he switches to the other part of his mouth.
The app on this one is going to have to only be offered on the Galaxy 7 S7 Edge. That's the waterproof one because that thing's going in the lake.
There is so much information in that statement. Rick has a Galaxy. Rick doesn't like his Galaxy. Rick has a toothbrush. Rick pays no attention to his toothbrush.
I do like my Galaxy, but it has been painful to relearn the user interface.
And if I just feel like if all of our radio fans would contribute, we could get Rick a genius toothbrush in July and just watch him basically become exasperated
erupt
with the idea your
volcano
toothbrush.
Volcano Rick.
This would be just perfect. Rick picks fights with his toothbrush. And he comes in all looking haggard. One final thing from this.
You don't have time.
I know. The amount of money per tooth from the Tooth Fairy dropped 10% in 2015, dropped down to $4 per tooth, national average.
Man, it was a quarter when I was a kid.
$4 per tooth right now for
I'm ready
kids.
To pull out some for now.
Can you pull us off the air, Rick?
Special thanks to Morehead State Public Radio producer Hunter Reese and to Eric Bilbrey, who wrote our Health Matters theme song, and to you, our loyal radio fans. Remember to show your support for Health Matters by visiting our digital empire. To listen to the show, go to WMKY.org or visit us on Facebook. Just do a search for HM Radio Show.
For our radio crew and the supportive folks at the Northeast AHEC, thanks for listening to our show. And remember these words taken from Mitt Romney's Dump Trump speech.
I'm no Ronald Reagan, but I believe with all my heart and soul that we face another time for choosing, one that will have profound consequences for Morehead State Public Radio, and more importantly for our country. I say this in part because of my conviction that we live in troubled and dangerous times.
But if we make the right choices, America's future will be even better than our past and better than our present.
On the other hand, if we make the wrong choices, the bright horizon I've described will not materialize. And let me put it very plainly. If we Republicans choose Health Matters as our radio show, the prospects for a safe and prosperous future are greatly diminished.
Now let me explain why I say that. If Health Matters is continued to air, the country would sink into a prolonged recession. A few examples. Health Matters could instigate a trade war that would raise prices for consumers, kill our jobs, and lead entrepreneurs and businesses of all stripes to flee America.
The show's refusal to honestly address spending would balloon the deficit and the national debt. So even though Health Matters has offered very few specific economic plans, what little they have said is enough to know that they would be very bad for American workers and for American families.
But you say, wait, wait, wait. Aren't they a huge radio success? Don't they know what they're talking about? No, they aren't, and no, they don't.
The bullying, the greed, the showing off, the absurd third-grade theatrics. Now imagine your children and your grandchildren acting the way Tony and Rick do. Would you welcome that? Haven't we seen before what happens when people in prominent positions fail the basic responsibility of honorable conduct? We have, and it always injures our families and our country.
I am convinced America has greatness ahead, and this is a time for choosing. God bless us to choose a radio show that will make that vision a reality.
Thank you, and God bless you all.
Support for Health Matters on MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Morehead. Additional information on the Northeast AHEC is available online at neahec.org.